ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda, text number 31. Vayam tu purusha vyagra,
Vayam tu purusha vyagra,
Aishvaka chatra bandavaha, Muchukunda iti prokto, Yauvanas vatmaja prabho, Vayam tu purusha vyagra, Aikshvaka chatra bandava, Muchukunda iti prokto, Yauvanashvat majaprabho, Vayam tu purusha vyagra, Aikshvaka chatra bandava, Muchukunda iti prokto, Yauvanashvat majaprabho. Vayam, we. Tu, on the other hand, Purusha, among men. Vyagra, O tiger. Aikshvaka, descendants of Ikshvaku. Chatra, of Chatriyas. Bandhava, family members. Muchukunda. Muchukunda. Iti. Thus. Prokta. Called. Yauvanashva. Of Yauvanashva. Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva. Atmaja. The son. Prabhu, O Lord. Translation. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord, and I am the son of Yauvanashva. Purport. It is common in Vedic culture that a Kshatriya will humbly introduce himself as a Kshatrabandhu, a mere relative in a Kshatriya family, or in other words, a fallen Kshatriya. In ancient Vedic culture, to claim a particular status on the basis of one's family relations was itself indicative of a fallen position. Kshatriyas and Brahmanas should be given status according to their merit by their qualities of work and character. When the caste system in India became degraded, people proudly proclaimed to be relatives of Kshatriyas or Brahmanas, though in the past, such a claim, unaccompanied by tangible qualifications, indicated a fallen position. Om Gyanatirmanandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militan Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuntananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. You see what is real. Qualification, expertise, and ability here. Muchukunda Although born in such an illustrious dynasty, descended of King Ikshvaku, and although he has the great fortune of seeing face to face the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the proper mood, mentality, vision, still he introduces himself that I'm actually not a real Kshatriya. I'm not a real administrator warrior. I'm just remotely related to that qualification. In other words, I may be born in such a family line, but actually my qualifications are in doubt. This is humility. Rather than present yourself that I have so many abilities, so many qualifications, when will I be recognized? Not only I am qualified, but my family predecessors are also qualified. A devotee impresses the Lord with his humility, but not idle humility. It's not that we become so humble that we don't do anything. No, bhakti yoga is about humility in action. And this seems very difficult at first. How do you act with full intensity and commitment while at the same time being humble? The two seem contradictory. The Western understanding of that psychology is that you should always project your expertise, always project self-confidence in your abilities. That's the sign of a psychologically wholesome person. Therefore, prominent achievers are always taught to never soft pedal, or so to speak. Don't play down their accomplishments. Always take the credit, assert yourself. Top athletes are taught to say after they do something, you know, supposedly wonderful in a match, they just, I just don't know how I do it. Yeah, I'm amazed at myself how I do these things. They're not taught to say, well, actually, I have no abilities. Actually, you know, it was all luck. The ball just happened to roll in front of me, you know, which is the truth. But anyway, they're taught to project themselves as a sign of wholesomeness and the guarantee of more success in the future. Persons who make a lot of money, they're always expected to present some secret of wealth that they have mastered that no one else knows. No one understands how to give credit to someone else. No one understands that all the abilities come from Krishna. That includes abilities in the material world as well as the spiritual world. Therefore, even the most illustrious, wonderful devotee will always see himself or herself as very unqualified. Just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his song, if you examine me, Gurudev, you'll find I have no good qualities. If you'll do that analysis, if you do that examination, what will you find in me? Nothing good. Any good qualities I have are yours. Otherwise, I don't have anything. How can this be so? This requires some maturity. Yes, it's good just to say these things. Actually, I have no good qualities. My spiritual master's qualities are all that I'm made of. But it's also much better to start to try and realize this. How is it possible? It is so because when qualities and abilities are displayed in the illusory energy, they're worthless. This is stated in Bhagavatam. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kato mahad guna. About the abhaktas, the non-devotees, kato mahad guna, where are the good qualities? How can there be good qualities? Now you may say, well, I don't know about that. Is this just some kind of Hare Krishna fanaticism? I mean, I see a lot of good qualities out there amongst people, you know. Yeah. Sometimes I see devotees mistreat each other, but in the material world, I see people show gratitude, they appreciate. What does the Bhagavatam explain? Mano retainasati dhavato bihi. They seem to be good qualities as displayed in the material world, but they can't, because it's all in relation to illusion. The so-called good qualities are in relation completely with the external energy. Dream world, hallucination. If you don't recognize the supreme proprietor, how Krishna owns and controls everything, then how can there be any good qualities? As you all know, it's like honor amongst thieves. Some thieves break into your house, take your widescreen, high definition television, carry it off along with all so many other possessions. And then when they get back to their hideout, they say, let's divide it all fairly. And what will you say? Oh, just see the good qualities, these honest thieves. They're equitable amongst each other. Just see how fair they are, how honest in their dealings they are. Would you say that? Oh, you would. No, you would say they're thieves. That overrides all realities. What does it matter if they're dividing the property they stole from me fairly? It doesn't matter. They are thieves. Let's look at the original seed of the situation. No one would tolerate that. If there's some narcotics dealers and they treat each other nicely. I won't blow your head off if you don't blow my head off. Do you consider that to be good qualities? Of course not. You just look at the overall situation. These are drug dealers. How can they have good qualities? Look what they're doing, causing suffering amongst people. Similarly, if your life is totally under the influence of the external energy of the Lord, that means you're rebelling against Krishna. You don't recognize Krishna's proprietorship. Then how can you have good qualities? Same thing. Your basic position is criminal. But within that criminal realm, you manifest morality. It's unacceptable from the standard of the Bhagavatam. So this is not fanaticism. Sometimes as devotees get up in their years in Krishna consciousness, they start thinking, well, it's not necessary to have such a crystal clear attitude towards those who are under the influence of the external energy and those who aren't. I mean, everything is beautiful in its own way. See the good in everyone. Yes, we do see good everywhere, but we immediately attribute the good to Krishna. And we don't attribute any good to a life under the influence of the illusory energy. What is the point to it all? It's like attributing honor and valor and integrity to the dealings amongst thieves. Just like sometimes in the mafia, the various henchmen of the mafia godfather, they, in their confessions, you know, people like to buy books written by, you know, ex-mafia people, you know, and these books, all the inner workings of the mafia are exposed, and, you know, the writer has already spent, you know, years in jail, so then he just, now he makes money by revealing, you know. So, often I have heard, you know, in these books, the mafia henchman extols the glories of his boss, the godfather. He always treated us nicely. When my daughter graduated from university, he came and he gave me a special bonus. A brand new car that he had extorted out of a local car dealer. Protection fees. He gave my daughter a brand new Mercedes. What a fine man. So they say like that. They glorify such good qualities. Now, would you do that? Oh, that was, yes, I agree. It was he's a nice mafia godfather. He gave his henchmen a brand new Mercedes for his daughter's graduation. That's really family values. The mafia godfather is really supporting family values and wholesomeness. No, you won't say that. You say, where did the guy get the money from? You know, which car dealer did he extort the Mercedes out of? You know, say, give me a Mercedes if you want some protection for your business. Otherwise, you may come one morning and find all the windows in your showroom broken. And so you would never say, oh, such a wholesome person. You'd be repelled because of the basic stance of that person, which is criminal. Similarly, the Bhagavatam takes that same position. Harabhaktasya kuto mahadguna. In the abhakta, there's bhakta, the devotee, and abhakta. In the abhakta, how can there be good qualities? You may cringe. Ooh, I don't know if we can function on that with that understanding in the real world. Sounds good in Bhagavatam class. But when we go to our jobs, when we walk the streets and we sit in our offices, how can we think that no one has any good qualities? Yes, isn't that so? You have to see the whole picture. The job of the illustrator Jimaya is to cloud your vision. You can't see the whole picture. So you just focus on the immediate. Like you focus just on the mafia dons, you know, giving his henchmen a Mercedes for the daughter's graduation. You don't see the whole picture. He's a criminal. He's caused the deaths of so many persons across his path. He's racketeering. He's running the prostitution, the drug dealing in a huge area of the city. You don't look at that. You just look at his kindness towards his henchmen. So similarly, you have to look at the whole world of devotees and non-devotees in that way. You must see through the eyes of knowledge, not sentiment. They don't recognize any proprietor. They don't take the instructions from the proprietor how to use the energy that belongs to the proprietor. Therefore, harava bhaktasya kato mahakuna. Where are the good qualities? All the so-called good qualities are simply in relation to the material energy. That means valueless, a string of zeros, because the Supreme One is missing. Now it is a fact, as you know. You take that same long string of zeros and add the Supreme One, and you have so much. But as long as the Supreme One is missing, you have nothing. Let us look at this situation with Mutrakunda. He is getting darshan time. By the Lord's own arrangement, Mutrakunda has burned to ashes. The demon who chased after Krishna. And now Mutrakunda, in his darshan time, is gazing at the Supreme Lord. This is Vaishnava recreation. Whenever you want to relax, so to speak, whenever you want to have amusement, so to speak, whenever you want to seek pleasure, just come and gaze at the deities. That is Vaishnava recreation. It doesn't cost you anything. Is there a ticket gatherer at the door? Someone with a credit card machine before you enter it? No, you walk in freely and just gaze at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is Vaishnava recreation. You relax that way, you de-stress, your heart is nourished, your intelligence is purified, you feel connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the advantage of living near the temple. You can always walk in and just take part in Vaishnava recreation. Gaze at their lordships. Is there any sight in the material world that can compare to gazing at their lordships? No. Everyone says, oh, if I could only see God, then I would believe. But here, the Supreme Lord has appeared in a form suitable that you can see, because you don't know how to see spirit yet. So Krishna is so merciful with the Archavigraha. He appears looking like matter, so you can see him. He's not matter, but he's looking like matter. Like, you might say, well, how does that all work out? He's not matter, but he's looking like matter. We don't have any experience of such jugglery in the material world. But remember, Krishna is in charge of all the potencies. Parashya shakti vividaya vishriyate. All the energies belong to him. He has multifarious potencies. He can change matter into spirit and spirit into matter. When you sit down and take prasad, how many of you have any doubts about that? That Krishna has turned matter into spirit? No. Everyone is realized when it comes for prasad, right? Oh, this food is special. You proudly declare to all the guests, this is special food. It's been offered to Krishna. It's not normal food. Similarly, when you look at the deities, you are seeing something very special. So keep this in mind. The wealth that you have at your disposal. Don't be a miser who doesn't know how to take advantage of so much wealth that has been given. Your wealth is that you can come and gaze at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the advantage of living near the temple. You can come regularly. A devotee considers that advantage to be priceless. You tolerate the high rents in the area. You may tolerate not living in the exact kind of house or flat that you want. But when you look at the number one advantage, everything becomes worthwhile. I can come and gaze at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the Vaishnava recreation. So Muchukunda is doing that. He's gazing at the Supreme Lord. Now, he has some doubts. Not that he's doubting the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's not sure whom he's looking at. So he goes through his mind the various possibilities. But please remember, while he's going through his mind the various possibilities, he's staring at the feet of the Lord. This is the proper way to greet a superior person. You stare at the feet. Sri Muchukunda said, who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals? That was his first question, addressed to the feet of the Lord, about the feet of the Lord. Your feet are so soft, like lotus petals, yet you've walked on thorny ground. Who are you? I remember my first personal darshan with Srila Prabhupada. He came into my office at the BBT in Los Angeles, and I had just recently read in the Bhagavatam how the second canto, when you look at the deity or any superior person, you first look at the feet and then gradually and gently raise your eyes to the face. So when Srila Prabhupada walked in with his entourage of the senior Vaishnavas with him, I just stared at his feet. That's all. I just looked at his feet and then gradually raised my vision. And so Prabhupada reciprocated as I was looking at his feet and raising my eyes to his lotus face. He must have appreciated, you know, yes, this is the proper way to do things. So he didn't say anything, any words. He just made a deep sound. So there is a proper way to do everything. Real culture shows you how to present yourself. You can study Sri Mutrakunda's approach in this way. Throughout the Bhagavatam, you can learn how to present yourself to the Supreme Lord, how to present yourself to spiritual master, to the Vaishnavas. These are necessary skills. These days when you talk about presentation, people think you mean PowerPoint, keynote, whatever, you know. No one understands that presentation is most important in terms of yourself and the Supreme Lord and His devotees. So much of Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam is about presentation. We were discussing this past weekend in the seminar how Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis presented themselves before Lord Chaitanya. That's there. Those descriptions are there. So you can learn how to approach Krishna, how to approach Krishna's representative, how to approach the senior Vaishnavas, the devotees. It's not just, hey, how you going? How's it going, mate? No. Personalism means there's a proper way how to do everything in order to trigger the possible positive emotions in this situation. Bhakti yoga is the perfection of personalism. So there are ways to interact with other persons so that the beneficial rasas, the sweet tastes, are released by your presentation skills. Therefore, please pay attention to the various presentations in the Bhagavatam, how devotees present themselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or to the spiritual master, to the Vaishnavas. It's very important. So Mutchakunda has uncertainty. As stated, the highly intelligent king was overwhelmed by the Lord's effulgence, which showed him to be invincible. Expressing his uncertainty, Mukunda hesitantly questioned the Lord as follows. The uncertainty is, he's thinking, Jiva Goswami explains, is this really the Supreme Lord? Not that Mutchakunda is doubting the existence of the Supreme Lord, but he's, is this really him? Is this really him? So he expresses himself frankly and hesitantly, because the hesitation is due to the fact he's talking to the most superior person. So he doesn't just, you know, kind of get up in Krishna's face and, hey, who are you? Are you God? Are you Krishna? Like, sometimes devotees, when they're walking around the city, tilak, dotis, saris, you know, sometimes people, depends on which country you're in, but sometimes people can be very forward, you know, especially little kids. Maybe it's happened, it's come right up to you. What's that stuff on your forehead? Sometimes adults do that also. Hey, where'd you get that funny haircut? Of course, they don't say that so much anymore because there's so many hairstyles that have kind of Sikha-like appearances. So anyway, Mutchakunda has class. He speaks with hesitation. That hesitation is purposeful. It shows, I know I'm in the presence of an extremely superior person. Let me hesitantly inquire. And he begins his inquiry about the lotus feet. Padma Palasha Bhyam. lotus feet soft as petals. When you read these things in Bhagavatam, you should be feeling these things. This is sensory information. And by considering the sensory information in the Bhagavatam, you become purified from your attachment to material sense objects. Everyone likes soft things. So think of the lotus feet of the Lord, as soft as lotus petals, yet they walk on the thorny ground. That thought would give spiritual pain to the residents of Vrindavan, especially the young gopi girls of Vrindavan. Krishna's in the forest. His feet are so tender and soft that if a leaf, a soft green leaf, brushes Krishna's feet change colors. That's how tender they are. Yet, those same feet are walking in the forest over little stones and thorns. Oh, the thought gives us pain. In the spiritual world, even pain is blissful and pleasurable. That's why the spiritual world is perfect and complete. Everything is pleasurable, even pain. There's no duality. So you're meant to meditate on these realities. They're not just presented for the purpose of idle poetry. They're there to capture your attention, your meditation. With your mind, you focus on the soft lotus feet of the Lord. Feet as soft as lotus petals, walking on the thorny ground. In this way, your whole sensory system becomes purified. Then what does Muchukunda say? He shows his awareness of the cosmic hierarchy, the cosmic panorama. Perhaps you are the potency of all potent beings. Or maybe you are the powerful god of fire, or the sun god, the moon god, the king of heaven, or the ruling demigod of some other planet. These are various possibilities for Muchukunda. Maybe you're the Lord of Lords. Maybe you're a demigod. He's showing that he has awareness of all the different levels of living beings in the cosmos. He would never be under the delusion that only Earth has intelligent beings. Well, even if you think that only Earth has intelligent beings, it's a bit doubtful now that the beings are intelligent. Muchukunda has no delusions that out of all the countless planets in this universe, only this one has intelligent life. No, he knows there are entities far more powerful than human beings. It has been said that the greatest threat to religion as commonly known today, the Middle Eastern religions, the big three, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, the greatest threat is if governments ever release their information about unknown entities visiting the earth. So many statements are there. In the USA, the biggest military generals have said it is true. And it's our great, it's back in the 1950s, famous American general MacArthur, the one who won the Battle of Pacific in World War II. He said, the greatest threat coming up ahead is our relations with persons from other planets who visit the Earth. It's stated right in the New York Times. So many astronauts, so many military leaders have said, yes, this is all going on. But they're afraid to release such knowledge to the people because they don't want people to panic. Or, more specifically, they don't want people to lift their vision from just a lifestyle of work, buy, consume, and die. They don't want people getting caught up in, you know, otherworldly things when there's so much work to be done now and so much to buy. It's your patriotic duty to support the system of consumerism. That's the point. And you shouldn't know anything that will distract you from purchasing. Therefore, when you walk into the mall, you know, the contemporary temples, mandirs, are shopping malls. Even in India now, these malls are cropping up everywhere. And I don't know if I explained it here. Maybe I was in India when I explained it. The psychology that they're trying to do in India by putting malls everywhere is how to get the wealthy people to stop sending their servants to shop and get the wealthy people to get out and spend money. Because if they just send their servants, go to such and such a shop, get me a new suitcase. I'm traveling. I need some luggage. The servant will just come back with exactly that thing. But if you get the wealthy person to go into the mall, you know, with his credit card in his pocket, he'll just look, oh, I need this. What about that? What about that? And then you bring your whole family with you and little kids. Pizza, pizza, buy me this, buy me this. So that is the psychology. How to get the whole family shopping. Don't send your servant. If you are a genuine, respectable, aristocratic, wealthy person, you will go shopping yourself. And bring your whole family to this wonderful mandir called the mall. There'll be music playing. There'll be shops and cafes everywhere. All your senses will be catered to. So that is the main focus of so-called civilization today. And those who push on such a civilization, they don't want the people being distracted. Just like a good temple president. He doesn't want the devotees being distracted by anything except that he doesn't want any other... He doesn't want competition for Krishna. The devotee's senses should focus on Krishna. So a good temple president is always watching where the distraction's coming from. What is competing with Krishna? That's actually the spiritual job of a Krishna conscious manager. So similarly, in the material world, the bona fide, genuine representatives of Maya make sure that people stay focused. We just want you to work and buy. That's all. There's no need for any other distractions in life. So therefore, they don't want people finding out the information that they all have locked away, that they have been dealing with persons from other parts of the cosmos for a long time. Just recently in the USA, the governor of Arizona admitted, yes, I've seen such crafts, such mechanisms, not from this world. When I was asked about it when I was a governor, of course I said, I saw no such thing. But now that I'm out of office, I have to admit, I and thousands of persons in Arizona saw this. Oh, this was going on. So Muchikunda, he's not hampered by all these delusions. He just runs down the list. Could it be the king of heaven, Indra? Could it be Vivaswan, the sun god? Chandra, the moon god? Or some ruler of some other planet? And then he gets to the point. I think you are the supreme personality among the three chief gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Why? Because by your effulgence, you drive away the darkness of this cave as a lamp dispels darkness with its light. Muchikunda is saying, look at your marginal characteristics, technically known in Sanskrit as tatastha lakshana. All the darkness of this cave has been dispelled. That is indicative of the Supreme Personality Godhead. In fact, not only is the darkness of the cave dispelled, but all the darkness in my heart is gone. Therefore, you must be the Supreme Personality Godhead by your characteristics. And then he says, oh, best among men, if you like, please truly describe your birth, activities, and lineage to us who are eager to hear. In this way, Muchikunda shows how to become qualified so that Krishna will explain himself to you. The qualification is eagerness. Shushrushatam. Those of us who are eager to hear. In other words, he's saying to Krishna, I'm not a low-born fool in terms of low-born meaning bad behavior. Just see my eagerness to hear from you. That is my qualification. Of course, in the next verse, he'll describe himself as being low-born, but he's presenting himself as low-born in terms of, I have no real status, I have no real material qualifications, but I do have the one spiritual qualification which is necessary. Shushrushatam. I'm eager to hear, regardless of my fallen status. I'm eager to hear. Therefore, because I'm eager to hear, please explain yourself. We need this qualification. We want to hear about Krishna. We want to learn about Krishna. When you care for someone, if there's going to be any talk about love, there must be eagerness to hear. We were discussing this point yesterday in our seminar. We had some live examples. If you claim to be in a relationship with someone, we're talking about from the ordinary, mundane point of view, you expect that person to be eager to hear about you. I think we were using Vrindaranya as an example. Yeah? You expect, yes, Dandakaranya is eager to hear about you, right? If you start explaining about, you know, what you're thinking and what you're doing and he falls asleep, how do you feel? Or if he just turns on the computer and starts doing something, how do you feel? Or if he's not even around and just leaves you to talk to the four walls. Now, why should we treat Krishna in that way? We want to give to Krishna what we won't accept for ourselves. For Krishna, well, yeah, I've heard about him already, you know. You know, been around for a while, I've already done my quota of Bhagavatam classes. I've internalized it all. Now, in order for the relationship to be active and dynamic, we have to constantly invest. Just like in ordinary relationships in this world, everyone says you've got to keep investing every day in the bank account. You can't just, you know, consider, hey, I talked to you last year. Didn't we work this out last year? No, every day is a new adventure. You've got to invest every day. So why do we want to treat Krishna in such a humdrum way? Yeah, yeah, there's the deities, Kijai, in Bhagavatam class, devotional service. Yeah, 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 been there, done that, you know. I mean, what's the rush anyway? Krishna will still be there next week when I come. What's the problem? He's always standing there. Devotees are always giving class. There's always kirtan going on. I'll get there in my time. How would you like to be treated in that way? You're eager to explain yourself. Everyone's always eager to talk about themselves and justify themselves and explain themselves. You see, you don't understand. Let me explain the way I really am. I want you to really be able to perceive me properly. You know, it's really necessary that you get your perceptions right so things will click. You know, everyone's really so eager to pour out their hearts. And you have to listen. The other person has to listen. But when it comes to Krishna, why are we so callous? It's due to impersonalism. Impersonalism is contamination. Bhakti yoga is the most personal phenomenon you'll ever encounter. It is totally non-impersonal, and that can be frightening. It's like sometimes you feel there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. Krishna's everywhere. Always there's talk about relationship to Krishna, service to Krishna, chanting his name, offering this to Krishna, offering that to Krishna. God, isn't there somewhere to, you know, a hole I can just duck into for a short time? Everywhere it's just Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. This is too much. It's too personal. How about a little bit of voidism? How about a little bit of, you know, yeah, a little bit of good old-fashioned impersonalism? That's basically what our contaminated hearts are saying. Give me a break. It's just, you know, it's just, if you just let me go off into an impersonal void, then I'll come back and refreshed and rejuvenated and able to deal with Krishna and his service better. Just let me go through this phase, you know, where I ignore Krishna. Isn't that so? In ordinary relationships, sometimes a person just says, look, just give me some space for a while. I'll be all right. Just get off my case. Give me some space, you know. Then I'll come back more rejuvenated. So we may treat Krishna in this way. Just give me some space, Krishna. Let me be impersonal for a while. I'll come back. I'll return to your service more enlivened if you just back off and, you know, I just don't have to keep dealing with name, form, quality, pastimes, name, form, qualities, pastimes. 9 processes of devotional service. Shavanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Padanam, Archana, Vandanam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. I already learned all that for the initiation test. Got my neck beads now. I got my Sanskrit name. Enough! Enough! Hasn't Krishna gotten enough out of my life already? What does he want? It's everything. That's a problem with devotees. They want everything. That's why I'm starting to understand. You know, the so-called non-devotees, they're actually not so bad at all. With devotees, it's always this Krishna, 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 and more Krishna, 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 Krishna. Yes, this is our impersonal contamination. It is dirt that has to be cleansed away. So, Muchakunda is saying, O best among men, I'm eager to hear. That is my qualification. This eagerness is the product of spiritual advancement. This is our quest to get this eagerness. If we don't have it, we should actively seek advice how to get it. Not just drift from day to day, night to night. And I'm living in the temple, yeah. I'm living near the temple, yeah. Or I live far away from the temple and I come once a week. Or I come once a month. Or I come every Janmasthami, yeah. No, we need to make inquiry how to develop eagerness. And then our spiritual life will be successful. Now, it's natural that when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we're quite shell-shocked. And so, therefore, we do unconsciously retreat into impersonalism. We're afraid of being an individual. We're afraid of dealing with the supreme individual. But through purification in the bhakti process, we should lose this fear and push ourselves forward in deeper into personalism, deeper into bhakti yoga. That is easily done when you have good association. We are propelled forward by good association. And what's the best and most wonderful way how to go backwards in Krishna consciousness? Just isolate yourselves. Lock yourself up in your home and just figure it all out for yourself. And sooner or later, where will you wind up? Far away from Krishna. That's the power of the illusory energy. First, the illusory energy tries to move you away somehow or other from the association of devotees. Separate you. Because Maya is very clever in her service. She's not going to just get up in your face and tell you, why don't you be an atheist? Just deny that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, that will never work with you. So the material energy takes the back door. Just, yes, believe in Krishna, of course. Just move a bit further away. You may be living right in the same neighborhood as the temple. I think you need to spend more time at home. After all, Prabhupada said every home should be a temple. It's true. Seriously speaking, Prabhupada said that. But he also said, if you live in the same area as the temple, your main deity worship is at the temple. Why? If you say, why do you need deities at home? You're so close. 10 or 15 minutes away from the Arch of Vigraha, which is worshipped according to all the proper injunctions, standards given by the Goswamis. Therefore, it is more potent to come and see the deities in the temple. Of course, if someone is living far away, yes, they should really get into puja at home. Still, they should understand that there's generally a big difference between puja at home and puja in the temple, because everything in the temple, all the pujas happening to the highest standard. It's not that, well, we've got to go visit grandma this weekend, so I guess we'll just, you know, lock the deities up in the box and we'll take off. You can't do that in the temple. So, because there's higher degree of commitment in the temple worship, there's higher reciprocation from Krishna. The higher degree of commitment invokes the higher presence of Krishna. So let us remember that. And let us understand how the material energy tries to trick us away from bhakti, personalism with Krishna. Just spend more time in your home. It's more peaceful there. Occasional visits to see the Lord are quite sufficient. Why so much devotional service? You've already done that for so many years. Devotional service stresses you out sometimes, isn't it so? You have to listen to others. You have to admit that there are better devotees than you. Oh, God forbid. All these austerities are there in devotional service. But in the material world, everyone appreciates you. And you get nicely remunerated for what you do. What do you get? You know, what do you get through devotional service? I know they say eternity, knowledge, and bliss, but hey, we live in the real world. That's how the material energy deals with you. You live in the real world. What are you getting right now? Or as whenever I go speak at universities, colleges in India, every session I get this question from the students. It's always very hesitant. Could it be so that if you get too much into bhakti, too much bhakti, you lose your competitive edge in school and at the workplace? Every time you get that question. In other words, we become too absorbed in Krishna consciousness, we'll lose our abilities for the real world. Now, devotee is expert in everything. If you understand Krishna and his energies, you are able to deal with anything and everything. But it takes some time to come up to speed. By properly chanting Hare Krishna, for example, you see everything around you as diverse extensions of the Lord's energy. You all know that on days when you've tried to hear your japa, made it your number one priority to hear your japa that day, everything is different that day. You see the world differently. This is the first thing that persons who begin to chant seriously, they report. Everything around me looks different. What is the difference? You're starting to see everything belonging to Krishna. You're seeing everything as connected to Krishna. And in this way, you don't have the same exploitative vision anymore. Or, in other words, lusty vision. You see things as belonging to Krishna, and you see that these things should be used in Krishna's service. So let us meditate on Shushrushatam. Muchakunda says, that's our attitude. We're sincerely eager to hear about you. You have to convince Krishna of that, that you're sincerely eager to hear about him. Then your life is successful. Krishna notices, and he promises, Tesham evanukam partam, aham bhagana jamtama, nashayami atma bhavashto, gana deepena bhashvata. To such devotees, I, from within their heart, dispel the darkness of ignorance with the shining torch of knowledge. Krishna says, I'll do that for you. This is personalism. And furthermore, Tesham satyuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam, tadami buddhi yogam tam, yenamam upayanti te, to those who are constantly serving me with priti, with devotional love and affection. What do? I give them personalized instructions from within their heart how to go back to Godhead. This is personalism. Why do we want to hide away from this? Like owls keep the eyes closed whenever there's light. Do they have owls in Australia? Yeah. They hate sunlight. It can be a bright, sunny day. The owls keep their eyes closed. So we have to watch out for our owlish propensities based on impersonalism. All right. So, Muchakunda asks, who are you? He shows his eagerness. And then he presents humility. O Purusha Vyagra, tiger amongst men. Let me describe myself, because you just don't ask someone, who are you, if that person's superior, without yourself explaining who you are. As for ourselves, as for me, in other words, O tiger among men, I belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. Now, how can descendants of King Ikshvaku normally be considered fallen? Well, who does Krishna say he spoke Bhagavad Gita to? Imam Vavasvate Yogam, Proktavan Ahamavyam, Viva Swamanave, Manor Ikshvakave Bravir. I spoke Ikshvaku. So, Muchakunda is saying, I'm a descendant in the line of Ikshvaku, but I present myself as a fallen Kshatriya. I'm just a relative in his family, but I don't have the qualifications of a Kshatriya. That shows his qualification. He's not pushing himself forward based on birth, as explained in the purport. To claim a particular status on the basis of one's family relations itself indicates a fallen position. In this way, you see Muchakunda just sweeping away the whole concept of Brahmana by birth, Kshatriya by birth. He's showing actual high-class qualities. He's also showing the importance of good progeny. He's in the line of Ikshvaku. In other words, there should be families who are famous for producing generation after generation of high-quality children. That is a real human society. In India, when someone asks you, what is your gotra? They've forgotten generally what the purpose of gotras are. The purpose of gotras is to perpetuate a tradition of generation after generation of high-quality children. Otherwise, what is the meaning of gotra? It has no value. That's why Prabhupada told us, in India, whenever someone asks you, what's your gotra? You say, Achyuta gotra. We're in the line of Lord Achyuta. That's our family lineage. It is the job of responsible householders to, indeed, establish lineages where generation after generation are high-quality persons. That is real service in the family development department. But the whole world is suffering because of a lack of established quality persons who can perpetuate their good qualities. But in Bhagavatam you read, the truly high-class persons presenting their heritage, their family lineage. I'm in the line of Ikshvaku. Mm-hmm. Actually, though, out of humility, Muchikunda is saying, I don't have the qualities of Ikshvaku, but still I must present I'm in his line. I'm actually fallen. No, he's not fallen. He's showing us how to be humble. So please remember the art of presentation. How you present yourself to Krishna, to Krishna's representative, to the devotees. It is a beautiful art. It is heart-touching. When you read of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami presenting themselves to Lord Chaitanya, your heart is touched. When you sing the song, Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Daya Kodamore, Toma Abhina Ke Dayalu, Jagat Samsari, Lord Chaitanya, please be merciful to me. You won't find anyone in this world more fallen than me. These tug at your heart. These acharyas are showing us how to approach Krishna. How to approach the Guru. Arjuna is showing that in Bhagavad Gita. Not that. Jai Guru Maharaj, here I am. You know me. Powerful. Able. Competent. You got someone equally as powerful and competent as me, you know, for, you know. Yeah. Got any girls who are just like me? No, that's not how you do it. You fall at the feet and beg. I get priority because I'm the most fallen. You beg for the priority position. If you examine me, you won't find anything good. Therefore, I need your mercy the most. I need devotional service the most. So let us remember the presentation art. When we're dealing with senior Vaishnavs, you don't take them for granted. Yeah, we see him every day. What's the big deal? No. Actually, as I always explain, you have to beg Krishna for the ability to associate with devotees. It is a spiritual ability. It has really nothing to do with mundane social skills. Yeah, I'm a good talker. I can impress people when I open my mouth. I know how to, maneuver. I got the gift of the gab. You don't see those qualifications mentioned in Bhagavatam. So let us study the presentation art in Srimad Bhagavatam and make our lives successful. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
How do we adjust our presentation when dealing with material? So, you mentioned that everyone is a thief stealing from Krishna. So, when dealing with non-devotees, do we regard everyone as a thief, stealing everything from Krishna, and pretend to like them, to continue working the job? And do we...
You're talking about working? What are you talking about in particular?
Well, when I'm university dealing with...
I thought so.
Yeah.
And when they start telling you, to get a PhD, it's not so much your academic ability, it's who you know and who you drink with. What do you say? Right, right, I always thought that. As we discussed before, so much of what goes on as academic life these days, particularly at the PhD level, is really vaishya activity. It's all business. If you take it straight on as, pure brahminical activity, you'll get bewildered. Just like in your case, what is it? British Telecom, they wanted something researched. They figured out it's much cheaper if they give money to a university to have a PhD candidate do the research than they hire a scientist on their own. And so they give some money to the university, and the university looks for a PhD candidate to put on that topic. But it's business. So when you're doing business, you do business. Business means, you know, for you I make no profit. But if you think it's all pure Brahminical academia, pure knowledge quest, you'll get bewildered. So, you have to understand what's going on, what your purposes are in such a situation, and hold to that. You do the necessary without compromising yourself. You're not there at the university directly to preach. That's indirect purpose. But it's not that you march into your office of your PhD supervisors like, you know, all thieves, all rogues. Well, you don't do that, you know, because that's not your purpose at the university. Your purpose at the university mainly is, you think, well, I'll be a grihastha in the future, so some income is needed. And in fact, even now, while you're going to university, you're being paid very nicely. How many pounds a year?
12,000.
12,000 pounds a year to do British Telecom's research and get a PhD. So, I mean, you're earning a wage. I mean, how did you flew down to Australia from England, you know, courtesy of the university. So you have to look at it in a business way. All right, just like Sam, he's here from Wellington, New Zealand. He's doing his master's degree in accounting, and he's convinced the university, and they're very excited about it, that he should be researching spiritual accounting. So basically, they're giving him a full scholarship, giving him living expenses to research how to present Krishna consciousness in that way. He's getting paid to do that. His advisors are all very excited. Oh, this is a new subject matter. Finally, we're hearing something that's different. Yes, you should go on in this way. Publish. Put our name on your publication also. Make us famous so our department gets more money. That's the unstated truth. They're encouraging him. Well, Sam, you're a very good student. You're breaking new ground. We hope you go on from master's to PhD. And, you know, our department needs people like you. So, and what is he doing? He's night and day. He gets to just study research about how people cannot be happy through wealth. He's being paid to accumulate information for the preaching of Krishna consciousness. So... He's not going to march into his academic advisor's office and tell them that, hey, guess what, guys? You're paying me to devise a whole preaching strategy for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, you have to know what your purpose is. Just like if you're a business person, you can't just disclose your profit. Prabhupada explains that in the 18th chapter of the Gita. Business person always presents that this is such a low price. Practically, you know, I'd probably go out of business offering you this item at this price. That's expected. Just like you said, in the PhD world, every PhD candidate has to show that his research is going to make a huge difference. They know it's not, but you have to present yourself in that way. This crucial area of internet technology. What is your area of research, Eddie?
No.
You can't even bother. You can't even explain it. So it's so esoteric. But try. What is it?
Friends of artificial intelligence, but knowledge representation, in which I'm researching multi-user editing of description of ontologies.
And so, you know, he's supposed to present himself, you know, that this will make a huge difference in the world. Every PhD candidate is supposed to do like that in order to attract research funds. So it's a game. It's a business. But you have your purposes for serving Krishna. While he's at the university, he's brought others to Krishna consciousness. He supported himself. He keeps a flat in England where I can, you know, rest while changing time zones, flying from continent to continent. So all the, and then he's providing a, you know, good basis for family life in the future. So, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is night for the materialist is day for the devotee, and vice versa. It looks like we're in the same situation, but there's a world of difference. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.